itching the shit out of my eye because it's really itchy right now. I can't even figure out why. Oh my god, I just made a rhyme. Didn't even mean to. I think we're starting off on a great foot. Hello everybody, how are you today? I hope you're doing wonderful and splendid. I'm honestly not. I'm having a shitty day, but I'm hoping that this is going to make my day better. I think it will. I think sitting here and just yelling into a microphone about shitty police work and really sad stories is going to relieve my tension. Anyway, my name's Kimmy, if you didn't already know. If you've never been here before and that was your intro, I'm sorry. My name is Kimmy. Can't speak today. My name's Kimmy, and every week I smoke and I tell you a true crime story. And if you want, you can smoke along with me. That's up to you. I'm not gonna tell you what to do. So if you like that, if you're into this kind of thing, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. And if you don't like it, leave me a review and tell me why. And follow the podcast on social media at Truly High Crime and send me $300 cash. I hope everybody's doing better than I am. I hope everybody's having a good day today and everybody is surviving in this world. I have a really, really sad story to tell you guys today. It's fucked up. I'm still kind of scarred from last week. It kind of like also destroyed my Google search history. Like my FBI agent put me on some watch lists for that because I just got interested in like if that had ever been done before. And if you didn't listen to the episode, this woman was a cannibal. Well, she was a murderer, and then she would turn the people's like bodies and blood into like soap and into like cakes and stuff like that. And I can't stop thinking about it. Like, it occupies a lot of my brain. And I don't know if that's really weird. It probably is, but what has to be wrong with you for that to be your first reaction? Why am I still going on about last week's case? This week, we are talking about something fucked up, just as fucked up, and it's gonna have you pissed. It's another case that I'm surprised I've never heard of. It's finally been closed. They finally made an arrest and he got sentenced in 2020, so some fresh stuff. But we are talking about the tragic story of the murders of Kathy and Danny Freeman and the disappearances of Ashley Freeman and Laura Bible. So we are going to time travel and probably location travel to December 29th, 1999, and we are in just a small Oklahoma farm town in Northeast Oklahoma. 1999, that's the year I was born. This was almost 2 months after I was born. Britney Spears was in her prime, and I just wanted to start with something good. I just wanted something good to be said. Britney Spears was in her prime. Actually, her prime has never ended. Free Britney, love you girl. Anyway, I'm really off the rails today. Okay, sorry. It's December 29th, 1999. We're in Oklahoma, and it is Ashley Freeman's 16th birthday, and she is celebrating with her best friend, Laura Bible. Turning 16 is a big deal. You get your license, and Ashley was like super duper excited. She had saved up $4,000. She was working at a local convenience store, and she was like, I'm saving money, and I'm getting a car. And she had saved up $4,000 for that car, and she was hiding it in the fridge. Her and Laura had been best friends since they were, like, children. They grew up, across the street from each other, and then Ashley ended up moving away. Her, like, family decided to live out on a farm somewhere, which we're gonna talk about in just a second. But they still stayed friends. Laura had her license, so they were able to, like, drive to each other pretty easily. And they were just the best of friends. They were like attached at the hips, finish each other's sentences. So it was only natural that they would spend Ashley's birthday together. So that night they went to Pizza Hut with Ashley's mom, Kathy, which honestly, and I know she's going to be listening to this, Casey, that is literally like what we would do for our birthdays. We would just go to dinner with like Graham. So they go to Pizza Hut. Honestly, they're just two girls celebrating a birthday. Like, they're having a fun time. Like, they're just doing what 16-year-olds in a small Oklahoma town do in 1999, you know? After dinner, they went to Walmart, which makes sense because it's literally the only thing to do in a small farm town. I know this from experience. And when they were there, they saw Ashley's boyfriend, Jeremy, and then he went back to Ashley's trailer home with the girls, and she hung out there with them And he had hung out there with them for a little while, and he gave Ashley this necklace for her birthday. So Laura had permission then to stay the night with Ashley's family. Jeremy was there, and they all hung out and just watched TV, and then Jeremy left around 9:30. Real quick, I'm going to pause, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about how Ashley's family lived. They moved to be at a very remote location by choice, and they pretty much lived off the land. Their trailer home didn't have running water, and it was heated by the living room stove, but they did have electricity and phone service, so, like, they weren't off the grid, you know? But they had, like, a bunch of guns kind of laying around, and they were big hunters, and they hunted their food, and they grew their food and stuff like that. And Ashley actually really liked hunting, and she helped her family hunt for food, and she was really, really, really good at it. But there were also reports that Ashley's dad, Danny, was violent. In 1985, he was charged with beating his father-in-law after his father-in-law, quote, trimmed his bushes without consent. So, short temper, short fuse on this guy. A lot of Ashley and her mom Kathy's friends had reported that his temper scared the girls and, like, made them nervous. In 1998, he had been charged with child abuse for hitting his son Shane after a police officer had seen that, like, he had bruises all over and that his, like, this is really gross, and that his butt was, like, bleeding through his pants from, like, being beaten so hard. So he was charged. Danny was charged. He swore that it was over-exaggerated, and then he ended up acquitted. And we'll get into that story in just a second, but he was acquitted for that. So he actually grew weed. He grew marijuana on his farm for both his own use, but then there was also rumors that he was tied to a bigger gang, and kind of, like, had ties to the drug mafia. Danny also didn't have a job, so the family relied on Kathy's income, and Kathy was a restaurant manager, and she was known to be just an amazing person. A lot of people really loved her and cared about her. She was described as dependable and caring. So, sadly, not even a year before Ashley's birthday, the previous January, on January 8th, 1999, her brother Shane died in a police shooting. He was kind of a troubled kid, and the police had been looking for him for some time. And he had actually broken into Laura's home before and, like, stole things from her. He wasn't on a good path, but he also didn't have a lot of support. And he also blamed his dad a lot. Like, he ran away a lot, and he said that he was running away from his dad because he didn't like his dad or was afraid of what he would do. So they didn't have a good track record. So at this time he had stolen a car, and a police officer found him on the side of the road in the stolen car and confronted him. And according to nobody but the cop who shot him, Shane was holding up a gun, like, on the officer. So the cop had, quote, no choice but to shoot him, which, aren't there other places you could shoot somebody to, like, not kill them, when all this kid did was steal a car? It's just, I don't really believe it. They are white, so, like, it's not, like, a racially charged thing, but, like, why? Like, he wasn't, I don't know. I understand, like, if he's holding a gun on you, like, obviously the officer had to have done something, like, hopefully not shoot him and kill him, but, like, fire something into the sky, scare the kid. Like, I feel like I would never, but I feel like I would be a better cop than a lot of cops. And I know that's a hot take. I know it's a bold take. But I'm standing by it, because all you need to do is just practice a little bit of empathy and, like, realize that your job is scary sometimes, and you're gonna have to face being scared and not do the first thing that you think of. But anyway, I'm on a soapbox again. The shooting ended up being ruled justified based on the testimony, once again, from only the cop who shot him. It was an internal investigation. They used their own police department to investigate it. There were no other witnesses to the crime, so pretty much it was just like, okay, whatever, he was defending himself, nothing we can do about it. So this broke the family, obviously, and they don't think it was justified, and they think the cop was lying about something, that Shane must have been, like, trying to get away, or, like, wasn't... There's Albert. Anyway, they just don't believe the cop's story. They really think that Shane, like, they know he had a gun, which, like, they don't excuse, but they thought that he wasn't a threat. Like, they thought something happened that the police were lying about. And they were pissed, and they wanted to hire a lawyer to file a wrongful death lawsuit, but they didn't have a lot of money. So they started saving up, which usually I feel like in things like this, lawyers don't charge you out of pocket. They'll just take some out of the settlement if you win. So I don't know, maybe they didn't know that, or maybe it's different in Oklahoma. Like, I don't know, but they were saving up money, and they only had a year. Until a year after the shooting in order to file the suit, which would be January 8th, 2000. So kind of coming up on when we're back at Ashley's birthday. So anyway, the cops and the Freemans really just don't like each other. They don't get along, and Danny had said before that if anything ever happened to him, that he thinks it was the cops that did it. So, interesting. Anyway, we are back. It's December 30th. Nope, 29th. It's December 29th, 1999. The girls are having a sleepover, and life is going well. Laura's dad, I would just like to say, is one of the most wholesome men I have ever seen in my entire life. There's an episode of Disappeared on this case, and I think you should watch it because he is so sweet. He really made me think that maybe it's hashtag not all dads. Like, he was really a good guy. And yeah, so Ashley's boyfriend left around 9:30, like I said, and he was the last known person to see any of the Freemans or Laura alive. So around 7:30 the next morning, now we are at December 30th, 1999, Laura's mom, Laureen, had just gotten to work at the restaurant that she managed. And the sheriff showed up at her work, and he told her that the Freeman's trailer had completely burned down. So Laureen called her husband Jay, and Jay picked her up, and they drove to the scene. At that point, the fire had been put out, and officials were kind of just, like, sifting through the scene, but the entire home was burnt. It was just gone. And in this rubble mess, the sheriffs only found one body. And Laureen was like, okay, well, where are the other three? Laureen said and Disappeared that she kind of just felt like the investigators were standing there and, like, not doing anything. So since there's kind of already a conflict of interest between the Freeman family and the police in this town, they get the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation. Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. So, okay, there's this conflict of interest. So the local police department is like, you know what? We don't want this to look worse for us. Let's get the state involved. So the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation actually came in. I just sneeze. Okay, so the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation actually came in, and I'm just gonna later refer to them as the OSBI because I'm not saying that long ass name again. So they get involved, and they can't start investigating until they get there. So a few hours later, Agent Steve Nutter with the OSBI gets there, and he determines that the body that they found was Kathy. So they kept searching all of the debris, and then by 5:30, they wrapped up their search, and they said they are 100% sure there are no more bodies in the pile. The only other thing that they really found at the scene was an insurance card for a car, which, can't that kind of tell you a lot, you'd think? I don't know. That's what I think, and that's what they think in the future, but that's not what they think right now, for some goddamn reason. So at this point, the running theory around town was that Danny had started the fire, and he escaped with Laura and Ashley and was, like, kidnapping them. But Laura's parents were just holding on to any shred of hope that Laura and Ashley were okay. Like, they just wanted to know they were alive and safe, or at least alive. And they were pissed that the investigators didn't seem to be taking it very seriously. They were like, okay, well, if you don't see any more bodies, like, here, why aren't you searching other places? Why don't you have teams other places? Why are you only searching the 50 feet around their trailer when they lived on a 40-acre farm? Like, they just felt really helpless, and they felt scared. And they were like, nobody's helping us find our daughter and her friend. Like, we need to at least find the girls. So Laura's dad, the man who I was talking about is so wholesome earlier, he gathered up a whole team of nearby farmers, and they had little horses, and they just searched this entire 40 acres themselves. Can you imagine if the police actually did their jobs? Like, this should not be up to the victim's family. This should be the police. They should be doing a police search with the things that the police have to make the search more effective. Like, wow. The fact that they couldn't even do that and they made the victim's family do it, it's crazy. But they found nothing, and so the police were like, all right, let's go to the station, ask you guys a couple questions, we're gonna try to figure out where they were or what happened leading up to this. The OSBI was just, like, trying to figure out what the last few days had been like for the girls and for the Freeman family, just trying to get, like, any kind of idea or lead to follow. So this is when Lorraine is like, well, I know he grows marijuana, and I know that he has some people that he hangs out with, but I don't know anything further than that. And the OSBI was like, oh, so maybe this was, like, a drug deal gone wrong, or, like, drug traffickers or something like that. So they take note of that. And then the OSBI asked Lorraine if the Freemans had any enemies, and she tells them really clearly that the Freemans and the police do not get along. They were in the middle of a very public year-long battle after the cops killed their son. And, like, everybody knew this. It was really public. There was a lot of news stories about it. Like, it was a big thing. So they also take note of that. But all of the questions were about Danny and Kathy. They weren't really trying to figure out, like, where the girls were or what happened to the girls. So Jay was like, what about my daughter and her best friend? Like, can you do something to find them? Can you tell me how you're going to find them and what you're doing to find them? And so the OSBI is like, we're following every lead. We're going to keep you in the loop. Like, don't worry about it. But, like, their kid is missing, sir. Like, it's just all messy. So the next morning, they got a really, really big, sad clue about what happened to the Freemans. Kathy had actually been shot in the head and died before the fire even started. Her time of death was around 5 a.m., and they were able to rule that an accelerant was used in the fire, but they don't publicly say which accelerant, and they don't publicly say what kind of gun shot Kathy, just to keep some things out of the media so that, you know how police do that, like, they leave some things out so that they know if they actually have the right person. Funny. So now what was just a rumor yesterday actually turned into the lead suspect and, like, what everybody thought happened. Danny shot his wife and then abducted Laura and Ashley and then fled the scene. But all of their cars were still there. So it was quite shocking the next morning when Jay and Lorraine were at the site of the fire looking around the rubble for evidence. And guess what they found? Danny's body. Do you remember when the police said that they searched the whole area and they were 100% sure that there were no other bodies? How did these two average people, not investigators, manage to find an entire body that you guys missed? Ooh, baby. Let's take a quick smoke break. So they are able to determine that Danny had also been shot in the head. So there's their prime suspect whose dead body was literally right there all along. So now the search for Laura and Ashley is on. Laura's parents are almost convinced that they're going to find their bodies in the rubble, like how they found Danny's, because the police were obviously not searching the best. So they searched through that pile of rubble, but they didn't find the girls. So at this point, obviously Jay and Lorraine are upset because the police did not do their job. Like, you missed an entire fucking body. He told them there were no bodies left in the fire. Like, fuck that. And the police were just trying to do damage control, like, saying that, oh, like, we just missed it. Like, excuse me? Excuse me. So amid the chaos, Lorraine called Kathy's mom, Celeste, and told her the news. I literally could not imagine being on either end of that conversation, having to tell somebody what happened or having to hear that from your kid's daughter's friend's mom. Like, heartbreaking. And Celeste immediately is like, okay, so the police did this, right? Obviously, because, like, Kathy and Danny were just about to file a wrongful death lawsuit, and the police station just wanted them to shut up, which would also explain the whole crime scene not being searched. But it was the OSBI searching the crime scene. It wasn't the police station that killed their son. But I'm not gonna sit here and say, like, they don't talk. They don't have the same goals or mission. So that's all I'm gonna say about that. So Lorraine finds out from Celeste that Danny only needed $5,000 more to afford a lawyer to file that suit, and the 1 year anniversary of the death was coming up. So it was about to be, they were about to be out of time to file the lawsuit. So Danny needed to find $5,000 fast. So they pitch another theory that while Danny was trying to make this fast cash, there might have been some sort of drug deal gone wrong. So a big team of volunteers and investigators sift through the debris for hours, again, with search dogs to try to find the girls, but they found nothing. But do you remember that money that Ashley was saving for a car that she was hiding in the freezer? The investigators looked in the freezer and they didn't see anything. And my initial thought was like, okay, yeah, because it caught on fire. It's paper. It's money. It's gonna burn. But their initial thought was that somebody knew the money was there and they took it. So I think it could be either. The OSBI investigator Stephen Nutter had two theories at this point. Either some third party came in and committed these murders and then took the girls, or the girls were in on it. Police think that maybe Kathy and Danny had gotten into a fight and maybe Danny shot Kathy, and then Ashley was like, I gotta stand up for my mom, and then shot her dad. And then the two girls set fire to the trailer and, like, hid the scene and ran away. But, like, where did they go? And they didn't take money with them? Or did they take the $4,000 that Ashley had? But I don't think they did. I don't think they were any part of this, and obviously they weren't, because you'll find out. But also, Laura's car was still parked in front of the house, and her keys were in the ignition, which that was also weird because people don't usually leave their keys in the ignition. But I am going to say they are in a small town, and where I grew up, everybody kept their doors unlocked and their keys in their car and everything. Like, when I moved, I had to, like, get used to locking my door because we just, like, didn't do that where I lived. So that could be just, like, part of the town, but it's also weird to just leave your keys in your ignition. Like, it's just a little odd. But the family and the investigators just kept searching all of the nearby areas for the girls, or at least their bodies, or at least a trace of them, but they got nothing. They found no traces, no clues, no evidence. And the weird part of this case was that nobody knew anything. Like, there was no grapevine to talk through. There was no gossip, no rumors, like, nobody saying, like, oh, I know who did it. Because usually in cases like this, especially in a small town, somebody knows something and they mention to somebody else and then it turns into gossip, which turns into a lead, but not in this case. Like, nothing happened. And they had nothing to go off of. So the investigators then started to think that maybe who did this wasn't from the area. But Ashley's grandma Celeste is like, nope, the police had something to do with this. Like, she was raising hell about the fact that she believed the police had something to do with the death and the disappearance of the girls. So a few weeks after the fire, the cop who shot Shane took a lie detector test. And a couple other police officers did too. And they passed the test, but, like, they're cops. They know how to rig the system. And also, polygraphs don't hold up in court, so I don't know why we still give them. And why are we just gonna be like, okay, well, he passed the lie detector, he didn't do anything. Okay, back to work. Like, I don't know. I feel like, of course, the police are going to say that the other police didn't do it. Like, they have to have each other's backs. They don't. They shouldn't. But they think they do. So an entire 18 months since the fire, they're not really getting anything, and then they finally get a tip. Apparently, there's this family, the Glover family, not the Donald Glover family, but they are big into drugs in the area, and they have that reputation of being a drug family. And apparently, Ashley and Laura had been seen on this house on New Year's Eve, which was the day after they went missing. Trigger warning, this is gross. The rest of the episode, honestly gross. But a few inmates had confessed to seeing a tape of the girls being drugged, raped, and beat, and then tortured in front of a bunch of people who were high on meth at the Glover house. So the police got a warrant to search the house for the tape or for any evidence of this happening. And they had cadaver dogs, and they conducted a full search, and they found a fuck ton of drug paraphernalia and a meth lab and just a bunch of drug stuff buried in the yard. And they also found a blood stain on the carpet, so they sent it to the lab for testing. But of course, the labs were backed up. So it took over a year for the results to come back, and guess what? the blood didn't belong to either of the girls. So at this point, Lorraine and Jay didn't want to find out that the girls were there because it would have been heartbreaking, like, to hear that your daughter went through that. But they just wanted some sort of answer. And they had to wait over an entire year just to find out that it had nothing to do with them, and they're still just back at square one with nothing. The tape was never found, and all of the inmates' stories were never confirmed. Like, they're just believed to be rumors. Time just keeps on passing, and no news of the girls really comes forward. Jay and Lorraine worked a lot with the community, and they had a really good support system, and they raised a $50,000 reward for anybody who, like, had seen her, which, like always, brought in a flood of new tips all across the country, that were happening across the country at the exact same time. And almost every single lead was followed because it was a pretty highly publicized case, so they just wanted to do everything they can. And Laura's mom, Lorraine, did a lot of investigating and traveling and trying to figure this stuff out herself. She said she put, like, something like 200,000 miles on her car, just driving around trying to figure out what happened to her daughter. So at this time, serial killer Tommy Lynn Sells was in prison, and he had killed a girl the day after the two girls went missing. Our two girls, Laura and Ashley. So the police were like, let's go interview him. Let's go see if he had anything to do with it. And they say that it took a while for him to open up, but eventually he confessed to the murders of Kathy and Danny, and he said that he kidnapped Laura and Ashley and murdered them too. He took the police to where he said he dumped their bodies, but they didn't find anything there except for one single animal bone. So they're like, okay, this bitch is lying to us. And then he started to refuse to give them more details, and he obviously just didn't do it. Like, he was just making up a story. How fucked up do you have to be to confess to a crime that you had nothing to do with? Because I know this one happens. This happens a lot when the police coerce people into confessing to something that they didn't do, and that's, like, terrible and a whole other episode. How are you gonna be evil enough? I mean, and also, maybe the police did push him into confessing. I don't know. But how are you gonna be evil enough to say that you did something and give these, like, graphic details that you're just making up in your head because you don't really know what happened and pretend like you did it? I don't get it. I literally do not get it. How fucked in the head do you have to be? So we are at 5 years later, and the tips just start coming less and less, and the case is kind of just at a standstill. It's still open, but nothing really seems to be happening with it until a man named Jeremy Jones was in custody in Oklahoma. He had been on death row. He was sentenced to death for raping and killing a woman and then burning down her trailer in Alabama, which sounds a little familiar. And on the night that the girls went missing and on the night of the fire, Jeremy Jones had been arrested for public intoxication only 10 miles from where the girls were last seen. So the police were, like, pretty convinced he had something to do with it. Like, he was there. He has a reputation for this. Like, let's fucking get this guy. So they go to Alabama and they're like, hey, did you do this? And at first he's like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. But then he confessed the fuck out of it. And he knew all of the details that weren't released to the public, like the caliber of the gun, like I told you, and like the, oh my god, what was the other thing? What was the other thing? You all know it, and you're just, like, watching me struggle. Oh my gosh. I just tried to go back in my notes, I tried to go back in the recording. I don't remember what the other thing they withheld from the public was, but one of the things was the caliber of the bullet. And he knew this, so he, confessed to the crime, and the police were like, okay, wait, we actually finally got somebody. And his story was that Danny owed him drug money and wouldn't pay it. So Jeremy killed him and then killed Kathy, and then to destroy the evidence, he set the trailer on fire. And then when he was going to leave, he saw something he didn't expect. Ashley and Laura, which were two witnesses to his crime. So he played dumb and he pretended to be just as shocked as they were. And he was like, oh my gosh, get in my car. Like, let me go get you some help. And so they do because, you know, and then he held them at gunpoint. And he said, quote, I remember all of us crying because I didn't know what the fuck to do, end quote. And right when he said that, I was like, he's lying. He didn't do this. He's absolutely lying right now to our faces. But then he says he killed the girls and then he dumped their bodies into a mine shaft in Kansas. And then he drove about halfway back and he got high. on drugs that we don't do on this podcast. And that is when he was arrested for public intoxication. So finally, for the first time, Lorraine and Jay think they might actually have a lead suspect and they might actually get some closure. Everybody was feeling optimistic that they were going to get answers. And so in June of 2005, they searched the mines that they say that the bodies were dumped in. They brought cadaver dogs, they brought a lot of officers and a search team. But okay, the mine shaft was actually just a bunch of small, shallow mines, but they all connected underground. So pretty much it was like if you're looking out at an open field and there's just a bunch of like 2 foot wide holes in the ground that all like go down to a tunnel that all connect. And of course, when you're digging down to the water, when you're digging down to the ground, there's water under there. So anything that would be dumped would kind of like brush away in the water. So that didn't look very promising. But still, they put down like a waterproof camera and they searched all around, but then they found nothing. And then, since they found nothing, Jeremy fucking Jones recants his confession. But what do you guys think? Do you think he did it and like he confessed to it, but then when he realized that they had no evidence on him, he recanted his statement so his sentence wasn't worse? But he was already being sentenced to death, so it had no impact at all. If anything, they would maybe take off time on his sentence or give him a lighter death or something. Or do we think he actually had nothing to do with it and he was just being garbage and like trying to get involved in something and get his little 15 minutes of fame? I don't think personally that he had anything to do with it, and here's why. Kathy's time of death was 5 a.m. and he got that arrest for public intox at 4 a.m. So why didn't the police just look at that information first? Like, this all could have been avoided. They could have avoided this expensive search and like getting everybody's hopes up and everything. And it all just ended in a letdown for the family. Like, that's just rude. So in 2009, they held a service for Laura and the Freemans to mark the 10-year anniversary of their deaths and their disappearance. And then for almost 10 years, there was no movement in the case at all. Until April of 2018, 18 years after the fire and after the girls went missing, when the police announced that they have made a huge break in the case. But before that, let's take a smoke break because you're gonna need it. Guys, the Oscars are literally next month, so I guess that means we have a lot of movies to get watching, but I tend to fall asleep in movies because my hobby tends to make me a little tired. So if you find yourself in the same situation, the good news is you can catch what you missed on Oscar Bait, a podcast made up of four girls who have a lot to say about movies that could potentially be nominated for the Oscars this year. From One Night in Miami to The Trial of the Chicago 7 to even some bonus Golden Globes content, you do not want to miss it. So subscribe to Oscar Bait wherever you get your podcasts for a new episode every Friday for the rest of Oscar season. I love you girls. So in 2016, the county DA found out that the police station didn't turn over all of their key records from the initial investigation. Yep. The only thing that I can find about this is in passing, but like that's fucking huge and I don't know, it just gets really skimmed over. So pretty much they just didn't give the state all of their stuff that they had to investigate. And they had a lot of information and guess what? They solved the case off of all of the information that the police didn't give them. So for 2 years, they followed those records and they followed those leads and everybody that they had interviewed said that they heard Phil Welch, David Pennington, and Ronnie Busick brag about the murders and what they did to Ashley and Laura afterwards. People said they bragged about raping the girls and keeping Polaroid pictures of them as trophies, but police never did find the pictures, but up to 12 people said that they saw them, like different people and not sitting together in the same room. And they all had like same or similar stories, and that's what led to the big break in the case. So these 12 people knew all of these details the whole time, and they never said anything for almost 20 years. It was mostly girlfriends or close friends of the accused men. Phil Welch and David Pennington were known to be drug kingpins. They cooked meth, and they were scary people. Phil and David's exes said that they knew that Danny Freeman owed Phil and David money from a drug deal. So that's when they went to the Freeman's trailer and killed Danny and killed Kathy and then kidnapped the girls. Police were told by multiple witnesses that the girls were kidnapped so that the men could, quote, have fun with them. And they were alive for up to a week at Welch's trailer, where they were raped and they were violently beaten and strangled to death. But these women never said anything. These women never came forward because the men would threaten to kill them and then give them the same treatment that Laura and Ashley got. So that would be absolutely fucking terrifying. And they're still anonymous. Like, their names aren't out. So, like, protect them at all costs, please. One of Phil Welch's ex-girlfriends told the police that when she lived with him, this is so fucking sick, but when she lived with him, he would, like, decorate the walls with the girls' missing persons posters and be like, they're offering $50,000 for a girl that we killed, and, like, celebrate it. So fucked in the head. They were mostly ex-girlfriends, but also, like, drug friends. And then there was also two men that were interviewed, and they said the three suspects were, like, very proud of the Polaroid pictures and showed them off a lot. So, they're disgusting people. I hate them very much. And even if they didn't do this, I fucking hate them, and I hope they rot in prison. But Phil and David have since died. But Ronnie Busick was arrested and charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of kidnapping, and 1 count of arson. So, you remember that insurance card that was found on the scene? Well, guess what? It belonged to a woman who, at the time, lived with Phil Welch, and Phil usually drove her car. So, boom. That puts him at the crime scene. The police had all of this information. All they had to do was connect it, and they didn't. They didn't for literally almost 20 years. Mind-boggling. I hate them. Ronnie Busick pleaded guilty in July of 2020 to being an accessory to murder and the deaths of Danny and Kathy Freeman. He admitted to withholding information from the investigators about the two other suspects. And, whew, this is gonna really piss you off right here. His plea deal was only a 15-year sentence, with only 10 years to be served in prison, and the other 5 he could serve at home. But he was also required to take the investigators to where the girls' remains were, because he claimed to know, and if they found the girls there, it would take 5 years off of his in-prison sentence, so then he'd only have to serve 5 years in prison and 5 years at home. But guess what? They didn't find shit. So he was sentenced to 15 years, 10 years in prison, and 5 years at home. But guess what else? He got credit for the almost 2 years that he spent in jail since he was arrested, and the judge asked him if he'd rather go to prison now or if he'd rather wait 10 days, stay in the county jail for now, and then go to prison. Excuse me? Why are you giving him the option or the choice or anything? Like, what the fuck? It's so weird. It's obviously white privilege, but he gets 10 years in prison, minus the 2 he's already served for accessory to murder and kidnapping. And meanwhile, there are black people doing life for nonviolent drug charges. Abolish this system. End it. I hate this. I hate it here. In October of 2020, Ronnie Busick claimed that he had nothing to do with the murders or the girls' disappearance. He says that Phil was the evil one who did everything. He claims that the murders of Kathy and Danny were over just 1 to 2 ounces of meth, and he says that it, quote, sure wasn't enough to kill someone over, end quote, which makes me think that they've probably killed other people over larger amounts of meth that we'll never know about. So then Ronnie gives his little story of the night that part of it has been confirmed by investigators. Phil Welch was the one carrying the gun under his coat, and they were at the Freeman's house, and something happened. They were not on good terms, and something happened to make Danny reach for his gun. And when he did that, he was shot by Phil. Phil shot Danny, and then he went and shot Kathy. And apparently, and this is so fucking heartbreaking, after the shooting, the girls were able to escape out of the back, and they hid in the backyard by just laying down in the field, like, flat. And while they were hiding, the men were inside of the trailer, stealing money, taking everything, just ransacking the whole place, and stealing marijuana, too. Rude. And then they set the trailer on fire. So then when the home caught on fire, The girl stood up outside and then they were seen, which, I literally could not imagine, like, the trauma that they were feeling and the, like, adrenaline and the pain that they all just, like, went through. And then they see the trailer just get set on fire. They stand up to see what's going on, and then the people who did it see them. Ronnie said that David and Phil just grabbed them, like, just kind of grabbed them, ran and got them, and then tied them up in the car, and then shot them up with meth, and did really gross things, and then they were killed. Ronnie, though, he goes back and forth. He's not a reliable narrator. He lies a lot. Sometimes he says he has no idea what happened. Sometimes he claims he was there, but he stayed in the car. Sometimes he claimed he wasn't there at all. Like, he just has multiple different stories and multiple different versions of every story that it's impossible to track and it's impossible to trust him. And that's so infuriating for the family and the victims, like, loved ones. Like, they're just trying to get answers of what happened to their children, to their daughter, and to their daughter's best friend. Like, and you just can't even give them that. To this day, the girls' bodies have not been found. And anybody with information or about where the girls could be found, dead or alive, please contact the FBI Oklahoma office at 405-290-7770 or the OSBI at 800-522-8017. This was a hefty one. I told you guys it was really fucked up. We're just talking about a lot of fucked up stuff on this podcast. I guess there's no true crime that isn't. but I do feel a lot less ragey than I did at the beginning of the podcast, which is kind of weird. I feel like, I guess I just redirected my rage, because before I was just feeling angry at my day. Not even angry. I don't even need to have a therapy session. But anyway, now I'm just feeling angry at the police system and angry for the family and angry that shit like this happens and that, like, this is the world we live in. It's kind of really fucking depressing. But I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. I hope this doesn't get you down, or I hope you have a wonderful start to your day, or you sleep well. I don't know when you listen, but don't forget, like I said at the beginning, I know you love when I say this stuff. It's your favorite part of the show. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to leave me a little review and a little rating. And don't forget to follow at Truly High Crime on social media. And I cannot wait to hang out with you once again next week. Bye.